The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta, friend of the show, says Houston will not trade James Harden or Russell Westbrook. General manager Daryl Morey, he's out, as is coach Mike D'Antoni. But during his weekly appearance on CNBC's Power Lunch, Fertitta said that Houston's outlook hasn't changed. They are still contending. Stephen A., do you agree with Fertitta's plan to keep his superstars intact?
No, I do not. And I'm not saying that definitively, like meaning you have to trade him.
Yeah.
I'm saying you can't close the door on that possibility. You know, when you look at a guy like Russell Westbrook, he's been around for a long time. You look at James Harden, they've been around a while. Of course, you keep one of them. But the other may bring you incredible assets in return for their services. And I'm going to be a supporter of keeping James Harden at all costs. The brother just finished averaging 34. He averaged 36 the year before. He's a league MVP. He's been a top two candidate for MVP honors at least three separate occasions. This brother is something special offensively. He is a magician with that basketball. Now, the flip side to it is that you got to get the right coach up in there. You got to get a coach up in there that's going to preach movement, is going to make sure they make adjustments at halftime, is going to prioritize defense a little bit more than Mike D'Antoni did, even though Elston Turner, I thought, did a really good job. And in the postseason, Houston had the top offense, the top defense in the bubble. At one point before they went up against the Lakers, I mean, considering those eight regular season games and then the first round of the playoffs, they had the best defense in the bubble. So we can't ignore that. But in the end, when you consider the fact that what you have tried isn't working. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson's coming back and Golden State. Lakers ain't going anywhere. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George now have Ty Lue as their coach. So there's a new voice in Clipperland. Okay, we saw what Utah and Denver could do, et cetera, et cetera. The West is going to be loaded. What Houston has is not enough. This is not enough to win a championship.
It wasn't enough this year. How about next year?
It's not going to be enough. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't enough this year. It's not going to be enough next year. And Tillman Fertitta does not need to be saying, we ain't changing. Yes, you are. Because the man wants to win. You would need to change.
There are two levels to this. Number one, we agree about that part. I don't have to rehash it. Hire a GM first and then let him figure it out, right? Now, here are the two levels. If you are Kobe Bryant,
okay,
or you are Derek Jeter, forget football, it's a different sport. You know, Joe Montana, Tom Brady at the end, they were on new teams. Let's take other. If you're Kobe Bryant or Derek Jeter, and you have five chips with that organization, guess what? Derek Jeter in his last season plays shortstop, and it cost the Yankees a trip to the postseason because his defense wasn't good enough anymore, and he didn't hit much. Kobe Bryant got that last contract, $25 million a year, and he wasn't good enough anymore, and the Lakers were terrible. But fans of that team could say, Derek Jeter, that dude's never putting on another uniform. Kobe Bryant, there'd be like a riot. There'd be a mutiny. You cannot let Kobe Bryant or Derek Jeter put on a five-time champions for those towns and those franchises. They can't leave. That's not James Harden or Russell Westbrook in Houston. I'm sorry. They didn't come up with those teams. They haven't won any championships with that team. Now, here's where it gets tricky. Here's the second level. If you wait until the guy isn't that valuable anymore, the Knicks did this with Patrick Ewing, and then you trade him, you know what you wind up with? Cap problems. You trade him for guys who aren't that good, and the Knicks were buried with cap problems trading Patrick Ewing because they waited until he didn't have value. And if you planned on moving on, you should have traded him when he still had some value. Shaquille O'Neal, here's the other part. Shaquille O'Neal still had value when the Lakers traded him. They didn't get back equal value, and the Lakers weren't good enough anymore until they made, several years later, a trade for Pau Gasol. So the issue is, it's hard to replace a guy like James Harden. Usually in the NBA, the history of the league is whoever gets the best player in the deal wins the deal. Go find a better player than James Harden if you want to trade him. You can't just trade him for parts.
Who are they going to get? What do they do? I understand that they can't win with this nucleus, but it's not like superstars of their level are just growing on trees.
That's why if they wind up keeping Harden and trading Westbrook, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, first of all, that's the only thing. You don't trade James Harden.
Well, unless.
You don't trade James Harden.
Unless.
There is no unless.
Well, here's the unless.
You don't move James Harden.
Well, let's say Giannis is available.
Okay.
You trading James Harden?
No.
Really?
No.
Because I am.
No, let me tell you something right now.
Good.
Why? So Milwaukee could come to Houston? I mean, the bottom line is, if you're talking about finding a way to pair Giannis with James Harden, you don't let go. In today's NBA, back in the day, that would be different. In today's NBA, when you have a magician on the offensive end like James Harden has one problem offensively and one problem only. He needs too many damn, or he seems to need too many damn dribbles to do what he does. Outside
how many
of that,
chips does he want?
There is nothing. I understand that, but how many chips is a lot of guys want, Max?
How many,
you can't
how
go
many
by
teammates
that.
Has Giannis ever had like Harden's had teammates?
Excuse me. Well, think about this first. When you talk about Harden, when he was in Oklahoma City, he was very young. He was a baby.
Sure.
Then he goes to Houston. What do you talk about? Dwight Howard? How'd you feel about that?
Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook.
Well, you're the one that said if Chris Paul didn't get injured, they would have won the chip. That was you. You said
it happened
that.
Happened to be me. Why are you bringing
that's
up
what you said. Okay. So you said that. Yeah. So the point is that, again,
well,
there's a lot
they
of questions.
Chris Paul, they might win the chip in Milwaukee.
Listen, all I'm telling you is this. I'm not trading James Harden. I'm holding on to him for dear life because the brother is too special.
Let me say this.
He's too special.
Let me say this. We agree about this. It would be very – when you – the best player in the deal, that's the team that wins the deal, whoever gets the best player in NBA history, right? That's usually what happens. Very hard to find equal value for James Harden in a deal. I would never say never, period.
I would sit there and say you got to get the right coach, and it has to be a coach that could get Russell Westbrook's personality to modify just a touch, or you got to be willing to move him to get some other parts to pair with James Harden.
But you are not moving Harden, that's
I'm not
for sure.
Moving
not
Harden.
Even
but,
for
but
the
Harden
MVP,
doesn't stay put
Giannis
he's an icon. He stays put because of his value. There's a difference.
Harden is an icon to me.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
And we've got a jam-packed second hour, including whether or not Odell Beckham needs to leave Cleveland to save his career. That's right, we are going there. Plus, are the Dolphins making a mistake letting Tua start his first game against Aaron Donald? Meanwhile, per NFL Network's Jane Slater, an unnamed Cowboys player said members of the coaching staff aren't good at their jobs. Another player said the coaches are totally unprepared and they don't know how to teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. Paging Mike McCarthy.
I haven't been part of any of those type of discussions. I think like a lot of things, when you hit a part of your season or any challenge where there is negativity out there, you know, where it comes from and who it comes from. I mean, that's something that, you know, I've never chased, but I think you do have to recognize it. I think it's important to handle things as men. I mean, if you do have something to say publicly that is of, you know, of most importance, I think it's important to say it to the individual, particularly in a group dynamic setting, and especially in the game of football, especially for the Dallas Cowboys.
All right, RC back here with us. And, guys, I'm not even trying to blow up this story, but I think it's a huge deal. Obviously, Dak Prescott doesn't get taken care of. He gets hurt. Andy Dalton goes out. It's a disaster. They have a new coach. Now players are coming out and saying the coaches don't know what they're doing. Stephen A., is this a bigger deal for the players or the coaches? Where are you on this?
Well, to reiterate my point earlier, I think it's a bigger deal for the coaches because McCarthy just got there. I don't think that he has the necessary cachet to survive something if the trend that's taking place before our very eyes continues. They are horrible. Make no mistake about it. They've got the worst defense in the NFL, the second worst defense against the run. They seem a bit discombobulated schematically and otherwise, plus their effort has consistently been questioned. Now you're hearing why, because the players don't believe in what they're doing. Now, some would sit up there and say there's no excuse for a player to lack effort, and I completely co-sign with that thinking, because there is no excuse. But there is something to be said for being demoralized at doing your job. Sometimes it's hard to get that extra pep in your step when you don't believe in what you're being asked to do or required to do. You lose all faith. You don't even want to talk to or listen to or follow the instructions of people in authoritative positions because you believe they're incompetent. They don't know what the hell they're doing. That's the problem that Mike McCarthy has at his disposal right now. Another problem that we did not bring up earlier is Ezekiel Elliott, because he's definitely a huge problem. The man has already fumbled 5 times this season. He's fumbled 20 times in his entire career. He's fumbled 5 times already and has lost, I think, about 4 of those fumbles. He has been awful. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the hell's going on with him. And it wasn't just when Dak Prescott went down. It was prior to Dak Prescott going down. Ezekiel Elliott should be better. He hasn't been. I'll give him credit for manning up and acknowledging that. But that's problematic in and of itself. In the end, what it comes down to is that, Max, I get where you're coming from about Jerry Jones. I never bring up the owner because I know the owner ain't going anywhere. I understand that you're right about that.
But the GM could.
But here's my point, though. But he's not going anywhere because the owner makes that decision. And since the owner's the GM and wants to be the GM, that's the bottom line. In the end, what it comes down to is that McCarthy knew what he was walking into. A matter of fact, he even joked about lying during the introductory conference because he wanted the job so badly. Okay, it was facetious, you know, playing around, nothing serious. But the point is he wanted this job, which means he knew what it entailed. He signed up for it, and he has an obligation to do a better job than what he's doing, and he's not doing it.
Let me say this. If and when this Super Bowl is played, it will be a quarter century since the Cowboys won the Super Bowl. A quarter century since they won the Super Bowl, because they will certainly not win it this year. So as a Giants fan, I just want to tell Jerry Jones, the owner, keep doing what you're doing. You're a great GM. You and Steven got this. You're absolutely right in your evaluation. You were ready to win. You just needed to leave the last coach, who wasn't a good enough kind of CEO or play caller, and put in a coach that the fans would accept as an organizational leader. You got this, Jerry. Keep doing it. So that's really all I want to say, other than Ryan Clark, I saw you on Get Up this morning, and your point about Dak is absolutely right. Not only has Andy Dalton made Dak money, but Mike McCarthy has now made Dak money. This dude leads for 5 minutes, and all hell breaks loose. Dak is looking pretty good right now.
You know, this is the second time we got an opportunity to do that. And I talk about the hiring process, right? Jerry Jones having a sleepover with Mike McCarthy. You talk about the players not giving effort. You have guys coming out and saying, you expect me to play hard for 70 plays. Yes, I do. And if you don't play hard for 70 plays, I expect you to be standing by Mike McCarthy doing nothing, as obviously he seems to be doing. And I remember this offseason, every time I would bring up, you know, the Dallas Cowboys not winning the Super Bowl or not being as good as everybody thought they were, Twitter would be flooded. Well, we got Mike McCarthy. And I was like, I wouldn't be so excited about that. And so when you look at this organization, they have failed from top to bottom. And that starts with Jerry Jones. But, Max, you kind of went to my point before I could get there. Early on, Ed Werder on Get Up said, you know, the team may feel hopeless because Dak Prescott isn't there. And now they know they can't accomplish the goals that they wanted to accomplish. I feel like for a long time, and this is no disrespect, we've been trying to play Dak Prescott like he's Kelly Rowland. Like, you know what? He's important to Destiny Child and the Dallas Cowboys, but he's not the most important. That, you know, some things could flow around and we could still be good. Hey, man, Dak Prescott is Beyonce, right? Because LaToya Luckett, who ended up having great albums and being a star, they got rid of her and they got rid of Sarah and they added Michelle, but they still had Beyonce. So the album still banged and they still had some type of organization. They don't have that in Dallas anymore. Mm-hmm. Dak Prescott misses a game, you only score 10 points. The team doesn't compete hard. You don't play hard. You lose to a team that only completes 9 passes. Directly after that, the leadership part that Dak Prescott played. One thing you've always said, Max, Stephen A., no matter how we felt about what Dak said or what side of history he was standing on, he was always standing on the side of history that made the Dallas Cowboys look the best. He was always saying the things that were directly from the top, directly from the Joneses, to make sure the Dallas Cowboys were on one accord and they had one voice that was speaking a certain way. That's why he deserved his money. Now you see, as soon as he leaves, the team is worse. But not only is the team worse, now all these things are leaking outside of the organization, which he kept hidden. He was the reason that this thing was even staying afloat, and now it's falling apart.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, ain't nothing better than Queen B. Beyonce, please.
Oh, my
but I want to say this. I want to say this. She is special. But I want to say this. Kelly Rowland is not bad at all. That's number one. That's very important.
Sure.
That's very important to point out. There ain't nothing wrong with Kelly Rowland. Nothing.
I said ain't nothing wrong with her.
I understand. I just want to make sure for clarification.
Brian Clark, now, breaking up.
I'm just saying. Ain't nothing wrong with Kelly Rowland. Now, having said all of that, let's also point this out. This is why I was so upset. Even though I certainly don't root for the Cowboys because I despise their fans. This is why I was so upset when Dak Prescott wasn't taken care of. Because he was going out on the field and he was balling, and he was balling good enough to get his money. But what really resonated with me is that when you think about representing the Cowboy brand and what it asks for, and the fact that it's proof, Max and Ryan, because Jerry Jones literally uses the Cowboy brand to justify not giving you what you do. Are you not proud to wear this star, the star on this helmet? Are you not proud to represent this organization? Is not more endorsement dollars and opportunities going to come your way because you're representing the Cowboy brand? That's your attitude, okay? And this man represented you in exemplary fashion, and still, you didn't take care of him. Now, Andy Dalton is just one game. And let's remember what they were saying. Lewis Riddick, Brian Griese was pointing this out on Monday Night Football. They weren't just talking about his rust. They were talking about an absence of communication between the quarterback and the offensive line. That, again, comes back to preparation, which is the job of the coaches. Turnovers, of course. But in terms of things schematically and what have you, Andy Dalton was under pressure all night. They weren't protecting this brother. They weren't communicating with him. And I know you got some injuries there, too. But in the end, that kind of stuff was glaring, and that's about coaching.
Dak not only is being made money by Dalton and McCarthy, but he covered up for a lot of Jerry and Stephen Jones' shortcomings as GM. He makes players better. And I want to compare, like, Goff, Wentz, and Dak all come out together, and at different times, who's better? Well, Goff went to a Super Bowl, and he played really well up until that point. But as soon as Todd Gurley was compromised, Goff did not look the same, and neither did the Rams. Wentz was in an MVP conversation until late in the season. When he got hurt, Nick Foles won the Super Bowl and Super Bowl MVP. And the next year, the Eagles weren't going anywhere. Nick Foles took over from another Wentz injury, played them into the playoffs, won a game at Soldier Field, and very nearly at New Orleans, right? So both times you saw in their absence or that they were dependent upon other players. In Goff's case, without Gurley, not the same. In Wentz's case, when he left, the team was just fine. What happens when Dak leaves? Like, not that they were great with him, but they were in games. They were scoring points. He can't control the defense. Take Dak out, and so far, Mike McCarthy and Dalton have made him money, and it seems as though Dak has covered up for a lot of Jerry Jones.
What's going to be hard for this team is when we try to pinpoint this. Is this about the players? Is this about the coaches? I think it's going to come down the hardest on the coaches. When Mike McCarthy takes this job, you speak of the excitement that he had to get it. He understood there are certain list of rules you have to abide by in order for Jerry Jones to like you, in order for Jerry Jones to allow you to coach his team. One of those things was keep Kellen Moore, right? So you keep Kellen Moore there, and now you still have the same almost stale offense that I feel like Dak Prescott made up for with some of the plays that he can make, getting in and outside the pocket, the leadership, the poise. And then you go defensively, and you hire Mike Nolan with all of the young, fresh coaches in the game, with the way the game has changed offensively, and defensive coordinators need to be up with that. You go get a retread.
Hey, Ryan.
You say you set out and you learned things and did analytics, but this is what you do? That's on Mike McCarthy as well. So I think in the end, Jerry Jones is going to have to make a decision on his coach 1 year into his tenure. And that's not where you want to be.
Last year, didn't they have Rob Marinelli and Chris Rashad? I think. Am I correct?
Yep.
Yeah, they had both of them.
Yep.
And they were on an uptick. Mm-hmm. They were on an upswing. They were doing better. You got rid of them.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
That defense is legit, for lack of a better word, dookie.
Oh, Lord.
Why can't I ever finish?
Because you used the word dookie. That's why. You can't use the word dookie on First Take. I mean, because does it get cornier than that? Dookie on national television. Dookie, you're supposed to be cool. You're supposed to have some swag. And you use the word dookie on national television?
Well, you can use the word dookie. You can't use other words.
When you do have swag, right? When you do have cool, you ain't got to force it.
When I show up on SportsCenter or various other places that I have to show up and do work, all I'm going to do is use the word dookie. And when I use that word, everybody's going to know where I got it from. And let's see how it sounds.
One of the greatest characters in the history of television on The Wire was called Dookie, Stephen A.
Whatever, man. I don't want to hear that, Max. You can't be Ryan Clark.
Ryan, my mom texted me about that show, Sandra Karam, and she was like, that was such a funny segment. That Ryan, he's hilarious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See,
that's what
that's
I can't stand. You know, Molly, there's a lot of people. When you bring mamas into
She thought you were funny, too.
That's not the point. When you bring mamas into it, nobody can say anything.
I know. She was like, that was such a good segment.
First of all, I hope you don't mind. I want to call your mother Mama Q.
Mama Q.
Listen, I can't disagree with Mama Q. If Mama Q says he's funny, now I got to get out of
here. By the way, we've met her.
I can't do that.
Yeah, so it was a funny moment.
Can't bring mamas into it. I can't win now. I can't come back at him now after Mama
Ryan,
Keith
says
you like
it. Are you deading it, or are you going to resurrect the word on other shows? That's
I need to know before I move on.
No, listen. I'm gonna bring Dookie back to this show. This is where it originated. This is where it became a big thing.
Oh my God. We are cool.
This is what we could do.
All right.
I can't come back
to Mama Q.
Mama Q might not like that.
Mama Q might not like that. I can't say anything now.
All right, guys.
Bring mamas into the equation.
Let's keep it going, because we need to talk about this. Vocabulary Monday is what we're calling Ryan Clark's appearance from the other day. I want a new word next Monday, Ryan. All right, it's hard to defend the use and performance of OBJ in Cleveland thus far, though. Just 4 targets in Sunday's loss to the Steelers, 2 catches. People will continue to question quarterback Baker Mayfield if this keeps up. We have a full screen. I want you guys to look at this graphic of his receptions and targets for the season. I mean, it's a hot mess. Stephen A.
Yeah.
OBJ is something special. You know I'm a diehard Giants fan. He used to be on our team. If only he was still there. Actually, that would probably be worse for him if he was still there. That's up for debate. Does he need to get out of Cleveland? Because it feels like this man is such a special talent and his prime is being wasted.
Well, first of all, I said it yesterday. He needs to demand to be traded somehow, some way, and we need to support him. We need to support him. I'm talking about America. We need to support him. He is being hamstring.
Free
he's being compromised.
OBJ?
We need free OBJ.
Okay,
get
free
him
OBJ.
The hell out of Cleveland.
Let's get the
him
t-shirts
and Jarvis
made.
Legend. Listen, let's make reality. Right. If you really want to get down to the nitty gritty, there's only one reason why OBJ even wants to be in Cleveland. That's because Jarvis Landry's brother's there. If it wasn't for that, why would you want to be near Lake Erie, especially as the winter's approaching? You just wouldn't want to do that, okay? And LeBron James ain't in town anymore. So don't get me started. This is the bottom line, okay? Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't have a quarterback. I'm not trying to say that Baker Mayfield is a scrub. He has no potential. I'm not disrespecting a brother like that. But he ain't ready.
He ain't ready. And the best years of Odell Beckham Jr.'s career are wasted away. And if he did not have the troubles that he had in New York City, where he was treated like a damn criminal, who had never been arrested, by the way, treated like a damn criminal just because the brother sat up there and got emotional on a sideline because Max Kellerman kept telling the world, Eli Manning is done, it is over, and everybody in the New York Giants wanted the organization wanted to hold on to Eli Manning for dear life because he was class personified. Because
he was a nice guy.
He was a Manning and all of this other stuff. Excuse me.
Odell was making Eli look like a quarterback sometimes.
Damn right. Odell Beckham Jr. is still one of the best receivers in football. As far as I'm concerned, he's uncoverable one-on-one, all right? And in my estimation, you got a guy, even Ryan Clark, you got to admit this. And listen, you got a guy that's Dookie. How about that? A quarterback that's Dookie. How about that?
There you go.
Dookie quarterback. I use the damn word. A Dookie quarterback. There we go. Dookie.
Ryan.
Yeah, I said it. Here's the deal. Hold on, Molly. The deal is this.
Ugh.
Baker Mayfield, remember, I didn't play football. I don't know.
I know.
All
you
I
got
do
a basketball,
is listen.
Buddy.
All I do
I
is
know.
Listen to the aficionados. Here's the deal. I'm told Baker Mayfield, his first target. That doesn't work out. He starts dancing in the pocket. He's a bit haphazard. He doesn't have confidence. You can't read through his progressions, et cetera, et cetera. Well, guess what, Mr. Stefanski? Why the hell isn't Odell Beckham Jr. your first target most of the time then? Listen, he don't need to beat anymore. I want him in Green Bay, Max, or I want him in Seattle. Those are the two places that I want Odell Beckham Jr. One or the other. Green Bay or Seattle, get him the hell out of Cleveland. He deserves our support.
Do you recall?
All of us.
Do you recall me saying this exact same thing a month ago?
I don't remember you saying that about Seattle.
Not Seattle. Okay. A month ago, I got on this show and said the Browns should trade Odell to New England before it gets bad and he becomes a distressed asset. The other team I'd love to see is Green Bay. Look, I can't prove it because he hasn't been in that situation. I think Odell's the best receiver in football. I've always thought that since he came into the league. I think that he is more talented, more skilled, and a better overall player at the position than anyone. By the way, he can also throw a spiral with his left hand 50 yards, kick field goals, and hit home runs. Like, he's a different kind of athlete. And he is wasting away in Cleveland with a mediocre quarterback. Baker Mayfield's not awful. He's mediocre. Eli Manning was awful at the end. He has never gotten to play with a really good quarterback or for a great coach. Could you imagine what Bill Belichick could do with Odell Beckham Jr. in New England? How many different ways he could use him and what that would do to the offense, the dynamism, what it would do for Cam Newton? Could you imagine if you gave Odell Beckham Jr. Aaron Rodgers and vice versa with Devontae Adams? I would love to see him in New England or Green Bay. Stephen A., of course, he'd be great in Seattle, but they have excellent receivers. What do you give up to get him and all that? Odell right now, I'm telling you, if he's used as a decoy, if you bracket him, you devote resources to him, and then you don't target him a lot, but they're winning, I think he'd be okay. The value is still on the field. Like, Deion Sanders wouldn't always get a lot of interceptions because he would shut down one side of the field. That's okay. But they're not targeting him, and they're losing.
Let me give it to Ryan after I say this one quick comment. Max, if he goes to New England, that would upgrade them. He goes to Green Bay or Seattle, they're in the Super Bowl.
I think the same thing in New England.
You think they beat Kansas City? No.
I think if you put Odell on New England, they have like a 30-40% chance of beating Kansas City. I don't think anyone else comes close to AFC.
I think it's automatic that Seattle or Green Bay is in the Super Bowl if they get Odell.
Seattle's defense is a problem, though.
Yeah, see. When you talk Green Bay and Seattle, obviously, you have to worry about defense in those, but those would probably be, you know, you add the Buccaneers to that, the Bears, those would be the teams you see coming out of the NFC. Marcus Spears, my brother, said something yesterday that drew a little of attention. He said that Baker Mayfield is an average to below average quarterback. So this morning at 5 a.m., I'm on my call with Get Up, and I just start going through each division and seeing how many quarterbacks I'd take above Baker Mayfield in each division. Just going through each division. It's at least two in all of them. And then I get to the end, and I'm already at 22 people. If you get to 22 people out of 32 teams that you think are better than a certain quarterback for sure, and then some you don't necessarily know about, then that guy is below average. In 17 games against winning teams, Baker Mayfield is 4-13. Not only is he 4-13, but there's 29 turnovers in those games and 24 touchdowns. That's who Baker Mayfield is. Now let's talk about Odell Beckham Jr. I agree with Max wholeheartedly. And I'm an LSU guy. But I remember coming out of college, Jarvis Landry being the better college wide receiver. And it was my little brother that called me and he goes, man, Odell's going to be a star. And I was like, but you know, Jarvis is the guy. He's like, I'm telling you, mark my words. The night he catches the one-hander against the Cowboys, that's the first call I get is from my little brother. And so we're watching Odell Beckham Jr. and I'm looking at him and I'm saying, that's a Hall of Famer, period. Not he's really good. Not he's an all-pro. That's a Hall of Famer. We got one player in the league that can do what Odell Beckham Jr. does at that position, and that's Julio Jones. He's the only one that strikes that type of fear, has that type of explosiveness, can get down and run the routes the way that he does and have that entire package. That's it. When you watch Odell Beckham Jr. on the ISO cam, he is winning in Cleveland. The quarterback can't get it to him. So what is happening is this is not just about trading Odell away so he's happy this year or something good happens this year. This playing for Cleveland, playing with Baker Mayfield, even playing with Eli toward the ends of his career is going to ruin a Hall of Fame career. Not a good career. Odell Beckham Jr. is a Hall of Fame talent. He's not going to get there with this dude. That's how bad they are.
That is the and they, but here's the problem. You're absolutely right. When has anybody said that before today with the three of us? Think about that. How many, if it were other dudes that were perceived as likable or what have you, we would have been raving about this the whole time. We would have been highlighting the deficiencies of Baker Mayfield a long time ago, even more glaringly. We have given folks a pass because we want to sit up there and we want to look at Odell Beckham. You forced your way out of New York.
No.
You know what? You acted this way in New York.
Let me tell you why.
It's because we were comparing Baker to Eli Manning at the end, who was even worse. Let me just say something quick about Baker, Ryan. I think his arm is good enough and I think he's accurate enough. But those are not the most important things. The most important thing is the CPU. How fast are you processing information? I don't think he does that fast enough. And if you don't, then your feet better be quick enough. He can't outrun defensive players. He's not, he will never be an elite quarterback. He's okay. And so the best Odell has done is a guy who was cooked at the end of his career, Eli. By the way, look at the year Saquon Barkley had. Over 2,000 yards from scrimmage when Odell was there. And then a guy who's really a little below average in Baker Mayfield. Can we put him on a real team with a real quarterback and coach?
Are you and Molly going to sit here as New York Giants fan and just ignore the fact that the Giants said, we've got Saquon Barkley. Not only is he a phenomenal talent, but he's such a nice guy. He's a leader. He's the kind of guy that we want to influence the guys in our locker room and to justify pushing Odell Beckham Jr.
I killed him for that
trade. I know
that.
I'm just talking about doing it now.
You
because
understand?
That's why we don't talk about him in Cleveland.
Guys, here's the thing.
$20 million of dead cap money. The Giants ate it right after paying him to trade him for an offensive. Like, this was an insane move the Giants made.
Hold up, Ryan. Let me just say one thing. But if we're in the camp of protecting free OBJ and getting our free OBJ T-shirts, is he better off with the Giants right now?
No.
In Daniel Dimes versus...
No, we're not saying that.
So here's the...
Okay.
Well, yeah, the
biggest problem for Odell right now. Yeah, the biggest problem for Odell Beckham Jr. right now, and the reason I agree with Stephen A. that we have to back him, we have to support him, we have to say these things, is because he can't. For the same reason Stephen A. was talking about the reasons he was pushed out of New York, and it was a huge reason why me, as someone who knows him personally, hasn't said it. Because I believe if I start to say it, if I start to push for it, it's going to be that old Ryan Clark knows OBJ thing. Ryan Clark's an LSU guy.
Well,
he's getting this from somewhere. I'm not getting this from anywhere. Odell Beckham Jr. needs to be somewhere else. He can't say it. He can't do it because all of us know, no matter how we feel about it right now, If Odell Beckham Jr., if there's a rumor that he demands a trade,
he'd
it goes
killed.
Right back to
Real
people
quick,
mischaracterizing him and critiquing him.
In terms of Odell's maturity, think about this for a second. Maybe 3-4 years ago, he wasn't the same guy, right? But right now, is he saying anything? He's not.
Not a word.
He knows enough to keep quiet now. He is a much more mature player. He's been around the block. He knows how things work.
That's according to you. But what about the fact that he was in the New York market and now he's in the Cleveland market, so it's a little bit different?
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Meanwhile, in the NFL, the Dolphins have a bye this week, which means newly named starter Tua Tagovailoa will have some extra time to prepare for Aaron Donald and the Rams on November 1st. Here's Miami head coach Brian Flores on the move.
So we just feel like, this was the best move for our team right now. And, Fitz has done a great job. He's been productive. His leadership's been great. It's not an easy decision, for me or us as an organization, but we felt like, for the team now, moving forward, this is the move we needed to make.
All right, RC back here with us. Rye, I want to start with you. Do you agree with the decision to start Tua now this early on? Do you think it was the right move to move on here from Fitzpatrick?
You know, I didn't think so, but that doesn't mean that it's not the right move, and it doesn't mean that I don't respect the move by Brian Flores, and I believe that this move will be accepted and respected in this locker room. Brian Flores has had a plan for this team since becoming its head coach. We were all saying tanking for Tua. They're getting rid of all of their good players. They want Tua Tagovailoa in the draft, and we thought that that's what they were doing, but Brian Flores made the decision through seeing Ryan Fitzpatrick at practice last year as opposed to Josh Rosen to move on. He had a plan set in place that Tua Tagovailoa was going to start after the bye week. And now when you look at the way that Ryan Fitzpatrick has played against the San Francisco 49ers and the New York Jets in consecutive weeks, you say to yourself, well, why now? Because this is the plan that they have, because they've seen things from Tua Tagovailoa in practice that say, you know what, if we want to take that next step with the way that the rest of the team is playing, this is the move for us to make. This is our quarterback. And we all know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is a bridge quarterback, that he has been a great teammate and a great leader. But now is the time to get Tua started. Now is the time when you see the Joe Burrows having success and you see the Justin Herberts having success and you think that your guy is the best one, and you know that he has probably the best team around him right now, then this is your opportunity to get him in. The team is protecting better than people think, and now you have to worry about his health and his ceiling. And if Brian Flores feels this is the right decision, I don't believe any of us can argue with it.
Well, I can argue with it, but I can argue with it respectfully because I respect what the hell is going on in Miami right now. First of all, let's remember Chris Greer, our brother, is the GM for the Miami Dolphins. He hired a brother in Brian Flores that comes from that Belichick tree, and I think the plan has been in place, and they're doing a hell of a job. Major, major props to them. That's number one. Number two, you're absolutely right about Ryan Fitzpatrick, that offensive line, doing a pretty good job. Ryan Fitzpatrick's only been sacked 10 times. Let's make sure we pay attention to that. So, obviously, he was completing 70% of his passes. We can't ignore that reality, which is why I have some trepidation about the move. Here's my biggest reason for hesitancy about this move, Ryan Clark. Aaron Donald coming to town.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Could you have waited a week? I mean, just 1 week. Just 1 week. That's all I ask. Just 1 week. 1 week, Brian Flores. That's the only argument I'm making against this move. Could you have delayed it by 1 week where, you know what, you got the Arizona Cardinals? Now, we know how they look against Dallas, okay? But they ain't look that way against anybody else, even though I think they were on the come up as well. Aaron Donald's got 7.5 of the Rams' 20 sacks this season. He's leading the team, okay? This dude is the monster on the defensive side of the ball in the entire NFL, as has been the case for at least the last 3 or 4 years. This dude is something special. And the fact that Tua really gets his first start, and I can understand that there were several games where he had to come in, Max, and you know what, you're coming in reserve duty and stuff like that. All right, you had enough time, and now you're ready to go. Damn, you only threw two passes on the season, which was last week.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it, two passes. And the first time you get full duty, that dude is coming after you. When you're fresh off an injury at Alabama, and we had questions as to whether or not you should be, not literally redshirted, but basically redshirted this year because we wanted to make sure you were 100% healthy, and now I got to worry about Aaron Donald hitting him. I mean, that's my only problem with this. Brian Flores, Chris Greer, could y'all have waited just one more week? Because Bosa's gone and Bruckner's gone in San Francisco. That's why you ran him out of off the field a week ago, and what's his name? Jimmy Garoppolo had to get benched, okay? I see that you beat Jacksonville this year. I see that you beat San Francisco. I see that you beat the Jets. We get all of that. But this is a different animal. My only issue, I wish they had waited
I'll say
one
this about
week. Just 1 week.
That's
one
called
week.
Baptism by fire. I mean, Aaron Donald, when I think about the greatest defensive players I've ever seen, Lawrence or front seven guys, Lawrence Taylor at the head of the list, J.J. Watt, Bruce Smith, Ray Lewis, Reggie White, right? Like, he's in that category, one of the greatest ever. So I hear what you're saying. But that's baptism by fire.
Yep.
Like, I'm not against it. Here's the thing about Brian Flores. Let's just keep this in mind. Last year, early in the season, everyone unanimously said the Dolphins have quit. They quit. They might be the worst team of all time. That, you know this whole meme now, here's how it started, here's how it ended, right? You know how that season ended?
Yeah.
With the New
England,
with the New England Patriots needing a win against the Dolphins in order to get that bye in the first round. And what happened? The Dolphins beat them. Mm-hmm. And now they're 3-3. Flores is a hell of a coach. Now, do you start Tua right now? This is what I said yesterday. I'll tell you again. Fitzpatrick is just good enough to be dangerous to a franchise like this. He gives you enough reason to continue to start him, but you know he's not the guy to take you to the promised land. You got to get your guy, Tua, experience now, because in this NFL, you want to try to win on that rookie quarterback deal. Justin Herbert's already starting. As we know, obviously, Joe Burrow. Year two is when these quarterbacks really have that development year. So you want to get as many games as possible in as soon as possible so they can really hit their stride in year two. And then hopefully in year three, they really enter the beginnings of their primes. And you have several seasons with that guy under a team-friendly deal to pay other positions and try to win a Super Bowl. I get what you're saying about Aaron Donald, Stephen A. I think it's the right move anyway.
Yeah, for me, I wanted it to happen a little bit earlier, honestly. I wanted to see Tua Tagovailoa get some meaningful reps, not the three reps he got at the end of the game in a blowout against the Jets. I thought he should have had a package, and not this Jalen Hurts, Taysom Hill package, but a package where he could start to get in the flow because he didn't have preseason games, and you wouldn't get to see him under the lights, really. So it just seems like they had marked this, no matter if they were playing Aaron Donald or Bruce Smith, that this was the week he was going to start. What you also have to know is another reason that Fitzpatrick is dangerous is because he's been playing well, especially lately. And so now when you look at what he's been for this team last year when you thought they were tanking, or even this year to get them to 500, you're going to compare that to Tua Tagovailoa. You're going to say if you're 3-3 and we're better when Byron Jones is healthy defensively and you lose a couple of these games that you have against tough teams, it's going to be, are we looking toward the future all of a sudden then rather than focusing on the present? And so this is a risky move. This isn't just a home run for the Miami Dolphins and Brian Flores. And so where today I say, you know what, I give him that respect. I understand what he's been to this organization as a head coach. I'm watching and I'm looking because right now you're a game back of the Buffalo Bills. You're a half game up on the New England Patriots, and you are in a spot where you can fight for this extra wild card spot. If Tua Tagovailoa plays you out of that, I think that's a mishap.
Listen,
because of the dangerousness that Fitzpatrick is.
Justin Herbert or how he's looked with the Los Angeles Chargers, I think has a lot to do with this because we all know Tagovailoa coming out of college was considered better than him. Mm-hmm. So if he's looked that good, imagine how Tua could look. I'm just going to sit in prayer for this weekend.
Especially
I'm not worried about Tua throwing a football. I'm worried about him once he gets hit by Aaron Donald. I'm going to sit in prayer.
Okay.
In prayer that this
Alex
dude
Smith
ends up okay.
You might want to fast during the game while you're at it, too. What's up, Ry?
Hey, Alex Smith wore the Aaron Donald backpack, too, when he first came back. It's just a rite of passage when you're coming off an injury. Tua Tagovailoa will get that welcome to the NFL moment very early in his first start.
Yeah, you want the welcome is fine. You just don't want the goodbye to the NFL with an injury-prone guy.
Right, Aaron Donald.
Into the fire. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The big game is an AFC matchup between the 5-0 Steelers and 5-0 Titans in Tennessee. Pittsburgh's great defense will have a big challenge on its hands when they try to stop a big play running back, Derrick Henry. Take a listen to head coach Mike T.
Over the course of the last 10 or 12 games dating back to last year, this guy's got a highlight reel of big runs, unlike which I have never seen over that type of a time span. So the damage that he does when he gets in open space, that he's able to couple those attributes with sprinter speed is just ridiculous. So we got a full day's work ahead of us in Nashville trying to minimize his impact on the game.
All right, let's focus on the AFC North now. Marinate on that for a hot second. The Steelers lead the Ravens by a half game, but are they better? That's the real question. Stephen A., try to be unbiased here, okay? If you can you do that?
Yeah, I can. I can
okay,
I can
thank
try.
You.
I can try.
Who do you have more faith in, the Ravens or the Steelers, to win it?
Believe it or not, it's the Ravens. And the reason why it's the Ravens right now is because I've always had questions about the Steelers' secondary because of its size, not its athletic ability, speed, or whatever, but just its size, its height. I think bigger receivers can take advantage of them, number one. Number two, and more importantly, listen, I'm very pleased with what I'm seeing from Big Ben Roethlisberger. I'm very happy about that. The flip side to it, however, is this. For me, you've got the 24th ranked passing attack. You know, I know Big Ben's completing more than 65%, 69% of his passes. 11 touchdowns, just one interception. I get it. I love this guy. This guy, Chase Pool.
Claypool.
I love what I'm seeing from him. But I got questions about how potent you're going to be offensively. I don't have any questions about how potent the Ravens are going to be offensively with Lamar Jackson running that football. Steelers have the number two rushing defense. But obviously, because he's the quarterback, Lamar Jackson is bringing a different dimension to the running game from the quarterback position. I don't know if you're the Steelers, how you neutralize that. And so because of it, when I look at it from that perspective, I just need to see more potency on the offensive side of the ball from the Pittsburgh Steelers before I'm willing to usurp the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC North in an efficient capacity. Obviously, I'm hoping they will because I'm a Steelers fan, but I'm not sold on them yet.
Well, I might agree with you about the AFC North. I don't know about that, but I'm thinking bigger picture.
Okay.
Who do I have more confidence in? It's the Steelers. First of all, I know their defenses are comparable. I like Pittsburgh's defense even more. I think Pittsburgh has a special defense this year, and we saw it last year. You know why they went 8-8? Not only is Mike Tomlin congenitally, it seems, unable to be a losing coach, right? Like, no excuses, no nothing, just work hard. Well, they got Minka Fitzpatrick, and I think that was a tipping point on the defense. If you look at the Steelers this year, not only do they have a special defense, you can't run the ball on them, but offensively, they have Claypool on the other side of Juju Smith-Schuster. And Stephen A., you were the one who said, I'm not sure Juju's a number one. I said he looks like a number one. Without A.B., he wasn't. But with Claypool there now, it's a whole new dynamic. And Connor's really running the ball very well as the player of the game against the Browns. I think that all that said, what happens to Baltimore if they fall behind? Lamar Jackson still has to prove in the playoffs that he can bring them back once they fall behind. Roethlisberger's done that. Lamar Jackson's a better player right now than Ben Roethlisberger. But in that kind of scenario, beating you like that, I still like Roethlisberger better until Lamar Jackson proves me wrong. And so in the playoffs, I would prefer the Steelers. And for that reason, I have more faith in them.
Fair enough. Listen, how good would this division have been if Baker Mayfield was actually legit? And we don't know what Burrow might become, right?
They played the Steelers and the Browns and the Ravens. They got trounced both times, the Browns.
Yeah. Obviously, haven't lived up to the hype. That's a different story. Want to talk a little boxing?
Let's do it.
Okay, fellas. ESPN's top 10 pound-for-pound boxing rankings. They're out today, hot off the presses. Take a look at this. So Terrence Bud Crawford is at the top, followed by Canelo Earl Spence at number 4. Followed by new lightweight champ Teofimo Lopez is at 6. Max, I'll start with you. Do you agree with these rankings?
They're good rankings. Teofimo doesn't just replace Lomachenko because it's his first real good win against a top opponent. I would say, if anything, Tyson Fury looks a little low to me because pound for pound is one thing, but what we really mean is division for division.
Yep.
You know, if you shrunk Tyson Fury down to the same size as all these guys, fine, but at heavyweight, you can have a size advantage. And I think that counts in his favor, even in a pound for pound way. For a heavyweight, he is better than a couple of the guys on that list are for their divisions. So that's the one thing I would say.
I got serious questions about Errol Spence at number 4 because of that car accident, and we don't know how healthy he's going to be, and he's been inactive. I don't think you stay on the list just because you've been inactive based on the last time we saw you, particularly when you have an accident and that might have rattled you to some degree. We don't know how healthy he's going to be. That remains to be seen. I agree with you about Tyson Fury at 8. I think that's entirely too low. I am sold on Crawford. And I'm really, really sold on Saul Canelo Alvarez.
Yep.
This man is something special. He can take a punch. He damn sure can give it. We still haven't found James Kirkland in a long time.
Hey, by the way.
I mean, what Canelo Alvarez did to him, I mean, 7-Eleven couldn't find this, brother. We haven't found him.
To pick a Charlo brother for that list pretty soon. And also, Tank Davis is fighting Leo Santa Cruz coming up.
Gervonta Davis, yep.
If Gervonta Davis beats Leo Santa Cruz convincingly, he probably belongs
on the
list.
I will tell you this. The twins, we got to give them, the Charlo twins, we got to give them some love. They have not been as respected as they should be. These are both champions. You got to get them on that list as well because they're special.
Can I ask you this? Can Loma work his way back into the top 5? Like, what fight would that
take? No doubt. Here's the thing about Lomachenko. He's really not a lightweight. He's a featherweight junior lightweight. And he was struggling by his standards against top lightweights, but still winning. Mm-hmm. But Teo's not just a good fighter. He's better than that. And he had the size advantage. I think if Lomachenko fights at 130, he could quickly reestablish himself among the elite of the elite.
Nobody at 130 or 135, I think, would beat him.
Well, Gervonta's there. Let's see how, Gervonta.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's interesting. That's something special.
Yep.
Let's just take a second because we have about a minute left. We never get to talk about boxing. What are you most excited about right now, Max? Obviously, you're the face of boxing, especially here at ESPN.
There's so much going on. I hope that that Errol Spence is what he was before the accident. Mm-hmm. If he wins his fight against Garcia and advances, I would love to see the PBC stop ignoring Terrence Crawford. Sean Porter's not ignoring him. Terrence Crawford's name is in Sean Porter's mouth because he's a real champion with real heart. I don't want to hear Errol Spence talking about, well, I can make money over here. It's a business. I want to see Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford put aside any promotional or network issues and get in that damn ring.
Absolutely correct. That's the fight we all want to see.
And one more fight. Saturday, we talked about it. We had both the guys on UFC 254. It's an early start, 2 p.m. Eastern. What do you think? You think that he finally gets his first loss there?
I think Gaethje has a chance because of his power, but I think his only shot to beat Nurmagomedov is to knock him out, striking him. You ain't going to out-wrestle Nurmagomedov. I don't believe it.
Nurmagomedov's too physically strong. It's not just technique. He has elite technique with elite physical strength, and he's the favorite against anyone.
All right. Our big topic of the day, though, of course, was that story with the Cowboys, the NFL Network report. 59% of our fans are saying the problem is with the coaching. Mm. But obviously, guys, the other major problem is they don't have Dak Prescott, and that defense is terrible.
Yeah,
that's really the main two issues. But the Ezekiel Elliott, I don't understand the Ezekiel Elliott
my only part. He's fumbling the ball too much. My only problem is when you say how awful the Cowboys are, you actually look sad. I'm very happy about that.
Not
you
too
know
happy.
How miserable Dallas Cowboy fans are right now?
Not too happy. You want them in the playoffs, right?
Well, Amari Hardwick, more. Calais Campbell, but we went, they're
Dallas
here
Cowboy
tomorrow.
Fans are miserable
I'm
everywhere.
I'm a Giants fan. We're the worst.
Good for you.